proceed, please, with reading items 1158 through 1161 as a package.
1158, adopt the Broadway Corridor Framework Plan as the guiding document for future development of properties located in the study area adjacent to the Broadway Bridge, including the United States Postal Service site. 1159, authorize intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Development Commission to provide general fund secured interim financing for River District public improvement projects. 1160, authorize $45 million of financing for the cost of carrying out the urban renewal plan for the River District urban renewal area and authorize refunding of any interim financing. 1161, authorize $90 million of interim financing for the cost of carrying out the urban renewal plan for the River District urban renewal area and long-term bonds to repay the interim financing.
Thank you very much. I am very pleased to be bringing this package of decisions to the City Council this afternoon. We have been talking about this particular city-shaping opportunity for at least 20 years that I can recall, and it's wonderful that we're now at the point where we can actually make that city-shaping moment real. The post office has been located in its current position in downtown Portland because that's where the trains brought the mail. That's how long this particular location has not made sense. This is a story about growth management and the story about the continuation of the success of the Pearl District, the creation of a new neighborhood in what was once a railroad shipping and switching yard. It's a story of an urban neighborhood that fits changing urban demographics, and now we can shape it further to fit the demographics and housing needs of today. It's a story of about 1,000 affordable housing units and more on the way, a story about transit investments that have reduced our carbon footprint and made us a more livable city. It's a story about brownfields being reused and parks that weren't there before and now work for people of all ages and abilities. And it's a story about Portland as a destination, as the Pearl District and the other areas where we have created new urban life in the heart of our city are one of the great attractions of our city. In fact, we'll be joined a little later by a delegation from Hirosaki, Japan, this week's group studying our city. Just one more affirmation that we've created something special here. So we have an opportunity today to write a really important chapter if we act soon. It's not something that will be around for the next 20 years if we don't seize the moment. There are a couple of locations right now where the United States Post Office mail sorting facility can be relocated. Next year, there might be one. A few years after that, there will be none. So we have the moment now, and we have a team who've worked really hard on queuing up this opportunity for us as a city, and want to welcome Patrick Quinton, Lisa Abeloff, and Ken Rust, our chief financial officer, along with other staff who are here to support the presentation, and then we have some invited panels after them. So with that, Patrick, please.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Hills, and good afternoon, commissioners. I'm just going to do a brief introduction here. The mayor actually covered much of it, but I'll turn it over to Lisa first, who will walk you through the Broadway Corridor Framework Plan and the action before you, and then Ken Rust will walk you through the three different actions related to the financing. And as the mayor kind of walked through, we've spent a lot of time in the past few months, discussing this transaction and really thinking about the nuts and bolts of the transaction, the financing and the risk, the planning around it, and that's all appropriate. That's what people expect us to do when we take on a transaction of this magnitude. But I've been reminded by many that we don't talk about the opportunity enough, and just to follow on what the mayor said, this really is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to acquire a significant piece of land so close to many different assets within our city and accomplish so many objectives at the same time. And so I do, in my role as the head of PDC, I view it as part of what we're supposed to do, is we're supposed to seize these opportunities. And so I and my team are very excited about this. And I think what's special about this moment in time, as opposed to all the other moments in time in the past where we thought we had the opportunity to acquire this site is, and I think we can see better the purpose of doing this because of the challenges that we now face as a city that is experiencing tremendous growth, and we need additional places within the city to accommodate that growth, but also to provide public benefits that our city needs. We have the opportunity to bring this into our arsenal and to add all the different elements to it that I think the city needs. And in particular, and we'll talk about this, Lisa will talk about this, but when people think about the challenges of growth that we're facing as a city and what that means for residents and neighborhoods, this adds new space for all that to occur that doesn't displace, that doesn't actually put pressure on other parts of the city. So even from a growth management perspective alone, it actually begins to address a lot of issues. But more than that, we have the opportunity to express our values around affordable housing, around open space, around density, and around connectivity, around finally making connections between these vital elements to our central city, which include the downtown, Old Town, Chinatown, the Pearl District, and Union Station. Right now, these are in some respect disconnected because of the existence of the post office. And each of those areas has these crucial moments in time where with these added connectivity, they can actually achieve their fullest potential. So this is definitely an exciting time. And so I hope we all think about the magnitude of it. What's happening today is we have this high-level framework plan that Lisa will walk you through, really to kind of create the context for the decisions that both City Council and the PDC Board will make. So the framework plan doesn't lock us into a prescribed development plan for the future. It establishes principles and assumptions to guide us in the future, but also, like I said, for the decisions that are in front of us. So this obviously will come back, and Lisa will talk to you about the process for master planning and whatnot. And then Ken's going to walk you through the financing pieces. We're incredibly grateful for the partnership of Ken's office to make this happen, and the partnership between the city and PDC to help this financing package come together. And I think when you think about the right now we're talking about financing, there isn't a deal to actually buy the post office and move them. We're working on that. But the locking in the financing to make that happen and making sure all the parties are taken care of gives us the certainty that to go forward and actually finalize a deal with the U.S. Postal Service and with their eventual home. So this is the key foundation that we need to then go ahead and finalize our agreement with the post office and bring that to our board for approval. And we hope that that's going to happen in the next few months. Some big decisions in front of you, and like I said, I feel confident that we've done a lot of homework to answer all your questions, but we're happy to follow up on any additional questions. We have three panels afterward, and we can introduce those after we do the presentation, but one panel is to kind of give the context from the city's perspective in terms of planning and housing and whatnot. One is to give the perspective of the stakeholders that were brought in to advise us on the framework plan. And the last one is a group of real estate professionals who can give you a sense for how the market views this opportunity and what it means for the city and PDC to be take on this risk and this investment. So with that, I will turn it over to our central city manager, Lisa Alboff, who will walk you through the action for the framework plan.
Thank you.
Thank you and good afternoon, Mayor Harrells and commissioners. Just as a reminder, because we have a lot of guests in the audience who weren't here as a work session, I'm going to go rather briefly over some of the updates based on work that we did subsequent to a work session that we had with City Council regarding the framework plan. Before I jump into kind of a brief recap of the framework plan and those updates, I did want to say a bunch of thank yous. So not only did we have an extensive public outreach process where we got over 1,000 points of feedback from the public, and so first and foremost, thank you to the public for engaging in the process. It really was indicative of how exciting an opportunity it is. I also wanted to thank our advisory committees. So we had both an advisory committee made up of staff across all of your bureaus. We also had a stakeholder advisory committee. And I also wanted to make a special thank you to Sarah Harpole, who's really carried kind of the yeoman's amount of work in getting this process underway and kind of engaging the public and really being there on a day-in, day-out basis. So as a reminder, the framework plan actually looked at an area broader than the USPS site. It looked at that with intentionality because PDC does actually own and control a lot of the properties adjacent to the post office site, and it's what you see in this map. Properties like Union Station, what we call Block R, and then the significance of PNCA having recently relocated their central campus to the area. Adoption of the framework plan is really intended to be multifold. As Patrick mentioned, it does kind of set the stage and gave us a feasibility modeling to understand the financial performance of the site, the public benefits that could be brought out of the value of the site. It is also intended to guide PDC's investment in those broader areas. So if you imagine we have multiple properties within the framework plan area, understanding what the public's priority for redevelopment of those other sites were as well. And then finally, and we'll talk a little bit about this at the end of my presentation, it's intended to set the stage for a future master plan, which is called for in the Central City 2035 West Quadrant Plan. We listened to your feedback during the work session. So again, we heard questions around the financial risk, around making sure that the affordable housing target aligned with the Central City 2035 goals. And you'll see we did a lot of work with PHB with the Housing Bureau as follow-up to that. And then making sure as we thought about next steps for the project, that we thought about other public improvements like the park in front of the PNCA campus, the plaza in front of Union Station, et cetera, making sure that those are kind of thought about as we enter into a master plan scope.
You know, it's before you leave it, sorry, just looking at that slide, it's important to remember, I think, in terms of the scale of this opportunity, that area, about 20 acres, is just about exactly half the size of the Hoyt Street Yards property that was the heart of the Pearl District. In order to unlock the development potential of Hoyt Street Yards, we had to take down an aerial roadway, build a streetcar, and do a lot of other infrastructure to even make it developable. This is a much more favorable situation to the city.
I'm just curious, is the park to the west of PNCA part of the framework plan because PDC intends to have a formal role in developing that park, or you're just looking at it as part of the overall vision for the area, or both?
So as part of the framework plan, it was something that we heard, I would say, both from the public as well as from parks, is making sure that the park, as we thought about the park and or park space within the post office site, that it was done intentionally as a terminus to the park blocks. We speak to, and we'll kind of see this at the back end, it's clearly in parks ownership and control. I think we heard from Commissioner Fritz during the work session that she certainly has interest as we move forward with a master planning process that it be included in the master plan, and we think about it as part of the financial package of what happens within the framework plan area.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not sure whether it's the terminus of the North Park blocks or it's the ankle into the River District. We could debate that. But I also think there's some public-private partnership opportunities that we should capitalize on.
Absolutely.
And that the benefit of having PDC engaged is Parks is already stretched pretty thin and has an equity agenda on the other side of the river. But there might be an opportunity here to develop something in connection with this overall plan.
Good. Thank you.
So again, kind of staying at that broader framework level, we just wanted to give you a quick refresher in terms of the strategic vision and the unique opportunity that this area does pose. The other thing that hasn't been called out in kind of this brief discussion is the regional role that Union Station plays. So if you think about the fact that the airport is the gateway to Portland when you arrive via airline, the Union Station is really our gateway for anybody arriving via rail, either from the south or from the north. And so it's really kind of an important component as we thought about the framework plan. The strategic vision had a series, laid out a series of concepts, one of which you see here, which was kind of diagramming out the different kinds of public realm that could exist should the post office site and the broader area redevelop. And those are three different categories. Clearly, there was an area around the North Park blocks, be it the terminus, or you'll see the connection of green into the Pearl District. The second was at the Broadway Bridge. It's quite an actively used pedestrian and bicycle connection into the Central City. And the Central City 2035 plan did call for a green loop, and so you'll see in the preferred concept we did incorporate that into our design considerations. And then the last is really thinking about what is that front door to Union Station, either for folks who live or work here or folks coming to visit Portland. It also took a look at thinking about multimodal connection through the area. So Union Station doesn't just play a role as kind of a plaza, but it also plays a role For our light rail as well as heavy rail, and then thinking about gateways. So these are clearly kind of all gateways, not only for the region, but actually for neighborhoods. So moving between Old Town, Chinatown, and the Pearl District, how do we start to link those neighborhoods together? So this slide summarizes where we landed on from a preferred concept for an urban design form. So if you imagine, this is the preferred concept now just for the post office site. So we took kind of that broader strategic vision for the 24-acre site and said, what does that mean for the post office's 15 acres? We landed on something that really became a template for looking at different urban design options with items that were always constant, and those items being Park Avenue and Johnson Street as major public rights of way, two blocks of the North Park blocks, that's kind of sitting north of the PNCA block, and really thinking intentionally about the green loop. The framework plan does model the financials just to test the feasibility in terms of affordable housing of reserving 25% of all of the residential floor area ratio that we modeled as building for residential use for affordable housing. We then, following on our discussion with council, worked with the Housing Bureau to identify how we could get to 30%, and that's what came before council last week as part of the set-aside policy package update. And then, the last but not least, it does include a recommendation or a model development at a higher entitlement, what we would call a higher entitlement, than currently sits on the books. So it does model development at 7-to-1 FAR, whereas today it's at 4-to-1 FAR, and it's something that you'll see also will come back as part of the Central City 2035 work as well as the master plan, because that ties not only to the program of what kind of density of development can you realize on the site, but also some of the financials that Ken will walk you through. This gives you kind of a general concept of where we landed as our preferred approach to the density and the layout of the site. There's a lot of interest, and we heard this from the community, of thinking about additional height on the site, so not just development capacity, but really creating a landmark gateway for Portland. If you think about our downtown skyline, we have a lot of areas where you have kind of high towers that mark the site, and there was a lot of interest as to how that would play out, particularly at the Broadway Bridge. In the lower left, you actually see what the breakdown is that was modeled between commercial use and residential use. It's about one-thirds commercial use, two-thirds housing. And that one-third commercial use, there was a lot of interest both through the Central City 2035 process as well as our outreach with the public to make sure that we don't lose the jobs component of the program of what happens on the site. At that density of commercial development, you would actually have just as high a ratio of commercial use on that particular parcel as we have in our Central Business District. We also took a look at phasing. It becomes important as we think about the ability of our market to both take down kind of the developable potential of the site, but also thinking about making it accessible to different kinds of commercial tenants, different kinds of residential tenants. And so what you see that we phased is kind of starting from the northwest corner, moving south, preserving, there's actually an existing parking garage on that site today, as well as the existing postal building, and thinking about what portion of that building could potentially be reused and re-tenanted for some of our local companies. There's about 100,000 square feet of retail, and then the new development as part of phase one was pretty heavily focused on residential, and this was both tied again to kind of programmatic goals but also tied to financial goals. That's really kind of the value of the property that generates the amount of resources that we would need to invest in some of the infrastructure during phase one, and then phase two shows the full build-out of the site at about the 4 million square feet, so an additional million square feet of residential gets added, and another about million square feet of commercial, and that would be the time when we would actually demo the remainder of the U.S. Postal Building and the garage. You'll note this is a pretty extended development timeline, so we did tie what we would call the absorption or the development of the site to market performance that we've seen in the past in Portland. The financial analysis recommendations both recommended kind of starting with residential and then having the commercial or the new commercial come in on the back end, but also coordinating infrastructure and development so that we're not getting ahead of the game in terms of our infrastructure investments as a city. So just to go over a little bit in terms of the affordable housing approach, we heard a lot from Council as well as the Planning and Sustainability Commission about PDC working with the Housing Bureau to make sure that we were targeting the 30% figure that is the goal of the Central City 2035 plan. And so what came before Council last week as part of the 2015 set-aside policy recommendations was for the River District to allocate $20 million towards affordable housing in the River District Urban Renewal Area, with a significant portion of that serving to acquire rights, for PHB to acquire rights within the development of the postal site. And that's what you see before you. This is just a kind of a re-summary for folks who are in the audience and putting the pieces back together, so to speak, in terms of the framework plan and the set-aside policy. This really kind of commits and reserves 30% of the residential FAR as it was modeled for PHB to develop affordable housing. And then there was also kind of a commitment that PHB and PDC would work jointly as we move forward with the master plan and the development solicitations on the site. This slide reviews, assuming that $13 million of the site is acquired by PHB, what are the remaining resources that would be available via land sales to PDC together with tax increment financing that we've proposed being needed for demolition and site preparation. And so the top figure is once we modeled the development, the land sales that are tied to that development program, i.e. the scale of residential development that we modeled, the scale of commercial development that we modeled, and what we believe that the private sector would be willing to pay in terms of the value of the property together with our TIF. The second line item, we also modeled the system development charges, particularly for transportation and parks, tied to that development program, so tied to those units and tied to that commercial square footage. You then see a sources subtotal that becomes kind of the aggregate available resources that we've modeled from the city in order to reinvest back into the site. That then deducts, we did model the cost for the streets at Johnson and Park, and for the two open space parks as well, or the two park blocks as well as the green loop. And then clearly as part of phase two, there's a demolition cost involved in preparing the site for development that generates that land sales. There are additional public benefits. We had a pretty extensive conversation about this when we brought this before you as a work session. So what you don't see internalized to these numbers that clearly will take additional work as we move forward with a master plan is a cost estimate for the PNCA park, a cost estimate for rehabbing of Union Station. Clearly, kind of it's an important anchor to development of the broader Broadway corridor area. The framework plan does contemplate a plaza in front of Union Station on a parcel that PDC owns called Block Y, amongst other public goals that came out of our conversations with both the public and other city staff. So next steps, this is clearly kind of the first of many times that we will be before council. This schedule lines up what PDC we'll be doing in our negotiations with the post office. As Patrick referenced, we are having ongoing negotiations with the post office, both around site due diligence and around negotiating an acquisition agreement. That would then result in them actually continuing to design a replacement facility and moving into more formalized design and construction, which would take the next 2 to 2.5 years. Concurrently, we will continue to work with our City Bureau partners around the Central City 2035 goals and objectives and language that comes back before you in the fall of next year, particularly around the master plan requirement that's contemplated in the West Quadrant component of the Central City 2035 plan, as well as around any entitlement changes. And then a development solicitation and agreement to kind of go out to the private sector, really get our private partner on board, come back to you with a master plan, particularly if there's public investment contemplated, both via the affordable housing as well as via the infrastructure, with the goal of having kind of the first sale complete and construction underway in 2019. That aligns back with our phasing strategy that we had in the framework plan. So at that, I'm going to stop and welcome any questions. We have a few slides where Ken's going to walk through kind of how does the framework plan then feed into the financing structure.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lisa. Any questions about the plan itself before we get to the rest of the financing piece with Ken? Okay. proceed, and I'm sure we'll have more questions as we go along.
Thank you, Commissioners, and thank you, Lisa. So when we talked last time about this project, the big challenge has been is that being able to acquire the post office with inside the River District means that there aren't sufficient resources to make that acquisition and do all the other things that are planned to be done in the River District. And normally, that creates a real challenge for us. The unique opportunity here is that by buying the property, it also brings to the city an asset, and that asset can be monetized, and we can use the value of that asset in the future to repay other obligations. And so the challenge that we've been working on, and we think we have a plan for, is to utilize both the tax increment capacity of the district and the resources of the city's general fund, along with the assets that will be created as a result of the acquisition of property, to make this plan work and actually to be able to do more as a consequence of that. And I want to thank PDC finance staff that have been really working hard with the debt management staff of the city, along with the city attorney's office, in crafting the agreements that we have in front of you today. So what we have is three ordinances that would put into a place the financing underpinnings for the remainder of the River District projects and the post office itself. And so the first ordinance, Ordinance 1159, is simply the intergovernmental agreement that would set forth the terms and conditions under which PDC would be obligated to repay the city for interim financing associated with a general fund-backed borrowing that would enable certain public projects to be funded that would otherwise be displaced by the post office project. So we've laid out those terms and conditions. We have claims on PDC's resources and a plan for how they would be repaid and what PDC is going to be obligated to do in terms of moving forward with the post office site and what it can and can't do without our approval. So we feel very comfortable that the IGA protects the city's financial interests and is an important underpinning for the next ordinance, which is Ordinance Number 1160, which authorizes up to $45 million of general fund-backed line of credit that would be used to fund public improvement projects in the River District that otherwise would have been paid for with tax increment proceeds. And this is a consequence of being able to fit into the Urban Renewal District the acquisition of the post office property. So things like Centennial Mills demolition, improvements at 10th and Yamhill Garage, Union Station projects, and others would be paid for with this general fund backed line of credit in an amount not to exceed $45 million. The third ordinance, Ordinance Number 1161, has the authorization to move forward with a line of credit that we would develop for the tax increment-related projects inside of the River District up to an amount not to exceed $90 million, which may be secured by the general fund or simply by tax increment revenues in the future. That particular line of credit will be taken out completely from the future issuance of tax increment bonds. So from the standpoint of how we normally do business with PDC, it's not unusual for us to have a line of credit that we draw on as we wait for increment to build. We take it out with long-term tax increment bonds and pay off the line of credit. And in effect, that's what the $90 million represents. And is if the post office project didn't proceed, we would be asking for the same authorization to complete projects in the River District. So those three actions together provide PDC with the comfort to know that they have the resources available to move forward with all the projects, to complete negotiations with the U.S. Postal Service, acquire the property, and then when they realize the sale proceeds from the sale of that property, the city's obligations would be unwound. And we think that the IGA lays out an appropriate framework for protecting the city's financial interests. And as a consequence of that, I think that the financial plan that we've constructed allows all the projects to proceed on a timely basis and to complete the goals and objectives of the River District.
Thank you. Other questions for any of our team? All right, we'll stand by then, and we'll call up the first of those panels.
And you have the names?
Yes, I do. So, the first three are Joe Zender from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Javier Mena from Housing Bureau, and Patty Tillett from Zephyr Council Frasca, backed up by Nolan Leinhart as needed. Welcome.
Go ahead.
Yes, please.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor. I'm Joe Zender with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm going to be brief, and because I believe Patty's also going to address the urban design sort of elements that are built into the plan, and you've heard a bunch of them already. Part of the point I want to make is that we were part of the city team that consulted with the PDC and their consultant team on development of the framework plan, in that the issues that you see and the ingredients you see included in that framework plan were versions of the issues that were raised in the West Quadrant policy plan that you all approved. The urban design elements, such as streets and transitions to the neighborhoods, that's something that was considered. Open space in parks, and actually here it's kind of civic space in parks, which includes this extension of the park districts and the inclusion of some version of the Green Loop. Meeting our housing goals, you've heard about that, in terms of inclusion of affordability housing, and meeting our development goals. And this kind of had two prongs. One is, what's the appropriate mix of uses to plan for this site? It's going to be market driven. We don't, you know, 100% know, but what we're trying to establish is that the amount of development that could be accommodated on a site in the way that design supports also provides jobs and that aspiration for the sites and supplements it with mixed use of housing, because we've seen that actually makes a more vibrant and effective employment district. So the result is the framework plan that you see, and it, that the site has a high level of potential. It's a legacy site, so the design, the development thinking, the discourse is all going to take more time and detail. That's where that legacy sort of level of attention will come from. And the central city plan that you'll see later in the early part of next year includes a master plan provision that we are designing to be able to at least set up the urban design look that we think the site warrants, and bring the design commission into that, open up the opportunity for phasing diagram, open up some flexibility for the site. This framework plan is a good first step.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Patty.
Good afternoon. I'd like to address the urban design aspects. The site of the central post office has long been conspicuous as a void in Portland's urban fabric. And the opportunity presented by redevelopment of these 14 acres is to make it an active connector between the Pearl District and Old Town Chinatown, a critical link in the Green Loop, the northern terminus for the North Park blocks, and a nexus for public transit. Proposed urban design responses by the combined ZGF and SOM team include connecting the Pearl District and Old Town Chinatown with a street network through the site, together with living, business, and employment opportunities that will benefit both neighborhoods. Connecting the Green Loop from the east side on Broadway Bridge to its west side continuation on the North Park blocks, with accessible connections across the 30-foot elevation difference from the bridge to the ground, will be addressed. Extending the North Park block's open space into an inverted U of substantial buildings and marking the northern terminus with a landmark tower, which is also centered on the Broadway Bridge. Extending Northwest Johnson Street through the USPS site to connect with the transit hub at Union Station physically and visibly from the Pearl District. The landmark go-by-train Italian at tower at Union Station will be clearly visible from the west along a wide pedestrian and bicycle-friendly extension to Johnson Street. And as the transit capacity of the Union Station hub expands with new services to the southeast and southwest suburbs, the occupants of the redeveloped USPS site and adjacent buildings will have unmatched transit access. A new plaza at Union Station will be energized with both social and commercial activities from these folks. So the scale of development envisaged at the post office site will create a new and substantial focus for employment and housing, including affordable housing. This will be de facto transit-oriented development, advancing the city's goals of reduced dependence on automobile travel, reducing atmospheric carbon, and increasing walkability throughout the central city. It will also advance our reputation as a city where quality urban design continues to grow and to thrive. Thank you.
Thank you. Javier, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Javier Mena at the Housing Bureau. We don't get a lot of do-overs at the city, and this is a unique opportunity for the Housing Bureau, learning from the Pearl, the North Mac, the ZRZ developments. This provides, and also the potential density bonus, maximizing affordable units. It's a very exciting opportunity. We are very thankful and appreciative of being part of this discussion. The Broadway Corridor framework is consistent with the Central City Plan, the 2035 plan, in terms of the 30% of all units being made available for families at 0 to 80% median family income. Through the TIPS reset that was approved last week, an additional $20 million was allocated to the Bureau for this investment or investments of affordable housing in the area, and the Bureau is going through an analysis to the best way that it will invest those resources in order to maximize units and diversity within this framework. So we're very appreciative of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
A couple questions. Javier, the $20 million that we agreed to for the River District is not actually contingent on us adopting this framework. It's in the alternative.
Correct.
But in any event, what's the earliest time that we would have resources available to invest?
And that's a question for PDC. I honestly don't recall the time frame in terms of those resources. I know that there were $17 million that would have been made available if there is an agreement with the Postal Service to be able to buy the site that the city would, that the PHB would be invested in. And then the subsequent $7 million would be something that would be looking at how do we invest those resources within that site.
And in terms of the need in the district, what has the Housing Bureau identified as the particular need in terms of median family income housing?
We know that the greatest need is in the lowest income, 0 to 30. That's where the greatest number of units are needed. What we have looked at in terms of any of our developments is a mixed use that addresses those, or I'm sorry, mixed income that addresses those. The need is definitely, but with the limited resources, we also are looking at maximizing units that are affordable. So it's a balance that we're looking to create.
And are you considering working with Home Forward to do some project-based Section 8?
That's always on the table, and we always have continuous conversations with Home Forward with that regard.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
We have two more panels to call, one of stakeholders and another of real estate experts who've put their eyes on this proposal and prospect. The stakeholders group includes Ruth Adkins from Oregon Opportunity Network, Peter Andrews from Melvin Mark Development, and Jillian Florin from the Pacific Northwest College of Art. So welcome all three, and thank you for being here today.
Jillian wasn't able to be here.
Jillian's not able to be. Okay. Well, very happy to have you two here. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm with Oregon Opportunity Network. We're a statewide association of affordable housing nonprofits, about 20 members here in the Portland area. And I had the pleasure of serving on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Really appreciated having a place at that table and the robust conversations we had. Staff did a great job running a quick time frame, but very rich discussion, and lots of great folks on the committee. So obviously, from the housing, affordable housing community perspective, we're very excited to see this commitment up front and this intentional planning as part of this really exciting, massive redevelopment opportunity. Really also like the collaboration that we're seeing between the Housing Bureau and PDC directors and staff. That's something we'd love to see going forward, as well as transparency around not just the dollar amounts, but the units, the number of units, who they'll serve, as Commissioner Fish was highlighting a moment ago, and what the plan is. We know certainly, and I appreciate Javier mentioning just now, that this is in some ways a do-over to what we saw, as you recall, when the late, great Gretchen Kifuri, may she rest in peace, came here. It was really to talk about what the missed opportunity in North McAdam around affordable housing. So I'm excited to see this upfront commitment, and that we're going to certainly be involved and watching this as it goes to make sure that those commitments, those early commitments hold fast, and that we really, before the land values get out of control, that we can lock those in and look at not just at the post office site, but there are the surrounding sites, both those currently owned by PDC and those in private hands. So, again, really appreciate this commitment. We want to, one of the issues I raised, though, in the committee was just in terms of the number, huge numbers of folks currently experiencing homelessness in this entire study area, development area. So obviously we're going to want to look at avoiding displacement, figuring out how the opportunity for housing and services will be a part of this going forward for those folks. And in the largest sense, just the concern to make sure that this is truly a welcoming and inclusive area for all Portlanders, that this not become an enclave for the wealthy that's been fueled by massive public investment. I know that's built into the guiding values of this framework plan, but that's something that's just absolutely essential, that we see that this is a place for all Portlanders to live and work and play. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Peter, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Peter Andrews with Melvin Mark Brokerage. And I had the pleasure of sitting on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee with Ruth and many others. Brief overview of that group. We had four working sessions within that group, and there was a broad range of interests and expertise a part of it. And Portland Public Schools, adjacent property owners, Multnomah County, PNCA, numerous experienced developers, affordable housing interests, as well as adjacent neighborhood associations. It was well-informed, as Ruth said. It was a really great process to be a part of, with SOM and ZGF leading that, bring out some really interesting ideas and bringing forward what we think is a really, really exciting plan for the neighborhood. It's definitely a once-in-a-generation opportunity for the city, from my perspective. And I can speak on behalf, and I know others are gonna say the same, but there's no other site that is quite as exciting for downtown and the opportunities for the mixed use is really incredible. I can say that we know there are more institutional developers that are now looking at Portland at any time in recent history, and that kind of interest also creates the opportunity that have the capacity and the wherewithal to look at a major project like this. So, again, really excited, really impressed by the process that was put forward. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I guess since you mentioned institutional investors, Peter, I guess I just wanted to ask you, I feel that a lot of the institutional investors from out of state have no interest in doing affordable housing. That's been my experience and to date with the vast majority of ones I've had outreach with. So what do we do to change that?
There actually are a number of them that have really incredible expertise in working in places like New York, where that's a part of the policy. So if you deliver a certain amount of housing, that's included. I mean,
they have inclusionary zoning in New York City, New York State,
and they have that expertise of dealing with that. So,
like, give me a name.
I can't do that.
Oh, you can't.
But where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. But where it's our property, surely we can require that. You know, you don't get to develop here unless, and I would suggest maybe you don't get to develop here unless you're going to do some affordable housing somewhere else as well, or at least do a mixed use. Or a mixed income level.
Yeah, no, I think the policies we passed last week, certainly create that floor. But, it's always a floor, and we'd like to see somebody come in and do better, too.
Absolutely.
Well, Peter, can I just make an observation? Because there's, I think, an irony in what you just said. 22,000 apartments have been built in the last 3 years by the private sector developers. Less than 2% are affordable. And when a number of the developers were interviewed recently in a newspaper article, they cited generally red tape and bureaucracy as the impediments to using that program. The irony is you just mentioned a program in New York City where they are mandated to provide affordable housing. It's not an incentive plan. So what would it take to get the development community, in your judgment, to join the city in seeking a lifting of the preemption on inclusionary zoning so we can mandate out-of-state developers to do the right thing?
First off, I'd say that my expertise as a commercial real estate broker is in office. So asking me about residential unit, in particular affordable housing, which is very complex and typically takes subsidizing, is probably not my area of expertise. I would punt to some of the market people that are, I believe, following me in this this presentation.
So you're very respected in your niche, and I'm being somewhat playful, but it's just worth noting that in the places where developers are required to set aside a certain number of affordable units, the sky hasn't fallen. They're making record profits. But in a place where they're not required to, they blame the government for an insufficiently generous incentive and refuse to join with us in going to the legislature to lift the preemption on the one tool that seems to be working in every other city. There's an irony there, but
The only thing I can say in particular about the mixed use is that this only works if it's financially feasible. So from any of those guys, from any of their stakes, there has to be the rents that justify, you need the density to justify the building. We're seeing that happening in Portland. We've never seen rents increase as well in the office market, but that justify and create the opportunity where you could actually build the density and users that are interested in it. But if it's not, it needs to be financially feasible for them to look at. There are those opportunities, but again, I think the right group of people to answer that would probably be some of the residential developers that have that area of expertise and can really speak to their experience with the city. I personally don't. So, and our company doesn't.
Thank you both very much. Appreciate your willingness to work on this for the good of the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have in one more panel, which are real estate experts, Mark Edlin of Girding Edlin and member of the Portland Development Commission Board, Tim Mitchell from Norris and Stevens, and Eric Spohr from PAC Trust. Appreciate you all being here. Look forward to hearing the benefit of your wisdom on this idea. Who'd like to go first?
Go ahead.
All right, Mark, you get special status.
I was asked to talk about the financial wisdom of the investment we're making, but I'd like to make a few comments before that. As others said, this is truly a generational opportunity for our city. I've always viewed this as a linchpin between the Pearl and the Old Town District, and you look down towards the train depot and all the infrastructure we put in there, and the depot is a beautiful piece of architecture in our city, and I think this is really a great opportunity to make some good things happen. I would advocate that we, in addition to other priorities, that we emphasize local design, local engineering, local construction, and I would love to see it empower some young local developers to help them move their career along. It's our tax dollars. It ought to be our jobs. As for the affordable housing, I would be a big advocate of putting that on the private sector, and I would look for outcomes from that, and I'd love to see it mixed in with the balance of the project as opposed to taking a block for affordable housing and five blocks for private sector work. As for the value, based on what I've been, the information has been shared with me, based upon what I understand that the zoning that is contemplated to be put on this, I think after PDC and the city does their work with entitlements in place, assuming that the FAR that comes off the streets and parks goes on to the developable land, assuming that we take this to market in a very competitive, brokered fashion to get the highest value possible, and net of the public improvements, including the affordable housing, so straight market rate stuff, my estimate after the work is done that this on the low end is going to be worth $135 million worth of dirt, and on the high end, $177 million worth of dirt. So the finance numbers we heard of earlier, I think as a city, our investment is very, very secure. These numbers, in my opinion, are today. And I think we've talked about phasing. I think if it was the city's priority, and I understand we have issues with dealing with the USPS and requirements upon us, I think you could go to market today and get somebody to pick up this dirt after it's entitled with the improvements in place. I don't think it's necessarily a 10-year program. I think you can do it very quickly. And again, that's based upon today's marketplace. Biggest impediment that I see to this is the vagrancy along the North Park blocks. I know it's been a topic that's been discussed many times. We've taken efforts at as a city to address it, but I think it is probably the biggest impediment to achieving the highest value for this property. And that's
it. Did you say vacancies or?
Vagrancy.
So people living outside because they have nowhere else to go?
I'm not so much worried about that as I am the young toughs. Road warriors, the homeless, sure, certainly that's an issue. Drugs and alcohol are an issue. Chronic homeless people are an issue. But the big issue is the vagrancy and the young toughs.
So when you just attached a value, I think you said 130 to 135 million, and you said net of affordable housing? So just elaborate on that.
30 to 177.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. 130. And, Dan, what I'm saying with that is if you were to go out and just sell this as a retail entitled piece of land today, that's the value I think you'd achieve. So if we're going to require the private party to do whatever it is, you start pulling back off of that value to dampen the value to accommodate for what we're requiring the private party to do. And I would be an advocate of selling this to one party to keep control of it.
Say that again. You'd be an advocate for?
Selling to one party to have a master developer control the entire project.
So
I would not be an advocate of selling one piece to one party and another piece to another party.
So, Mark, with the action we took recently, kicking urban renewal, the percentage of urban renewal money for affordable housing at 45%, some have argued that's hastening the demise of PDC as an economic development agency because we're choking off some resources that they need to do their job. Well, we all agree that if PDC is going to be successful in the long term, we have to find a new model for them to generate revenue. And there are models out there of other cities that have economic development agencies that are not dependent on urban renewal funding but become entrepreneurial, have dirt, develop dirt. And they, in fact, act somewhat like the port, which is a which owns dirt and generates revenue and profit. In light of that, do you think it would make sense for PDC to retain ownership in this site and develop it so it has a long-term income stream and has some say over the development?
Great question. I think there's a number of opportunities out there. We could look at a land lease model. That's not done in Portland except for really the Port of Portland and a few other limited instances. But I think this property is significant enough that we could do that. PDC could leave in to the pot, so to speak. Let's say the net number of whatever it is, say it's $100 for the sake of argument. PDC could pull out $50 to repay whatever financial commitments it has and leave $50 in and go along for the ride as a joint venture partner. I think there's a number of ways to make it happen. So, I think that's a viable option.
Well, I just, Mayor, since this is all dovetailing at the same time, if we want PDC to be successful in the long term, we're going to help them reinvent themselves post using urban renewal funds. And it seems to me that if you look at the Rose Quarter, if you look at the post office site, and even if you look at some of the dirt that OMF currently manages, if we viewed PDC as an entrepreneurial agency that developed public land and maintained ownership stake so it had a long-term revenue source, that may be a model worth considering here and in some other things we're doing because we know we're about to run over a cliff. And the alternative is we'll just be shrinking your budget year after year.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think hybrid models of public-private partnerships are the future. Whether you're a PNCA in terms of trying to figure out how to make your budgets work, or an EcoTrust, or a PDC, or City of Portland, you know, how can we get more bang for the buck, so to speak? And I do believe there's a point where it's a private sector's role, and there's a point where it's a public sector's role, but there's a gray area in between, and I think that's a place PDC can capture value. You look at what the cost to do this transaction is versus the value being created, it's tremendous. And one of the things I'm a very big advocate for is I want to make sure we get every value of dollar out of this that we can for the city.
Thank you so much, Mark. Tim or Eric, who'd like to go next?
I'll go. Eric Spori with PAC Trust. We've been in Portland since 1972, have been a greenfield suburban developer for 40 of those years. We just, in the last few years, have seen what's going very clearly on in Portland and in other markets across the country where people are going back into urban locations. We teamed with Venerable Properties on the Washington High School redevelopment. I would say going forward that our focus is on urban investment and our traditional industrial as well. But I think that it's a cliche, but I think that the public sector should do what the private sector cannot. And I think that the Portland market right now at 20 million square feet in the central city is still a very small market. And with the jobs that are coming here and very clearly the demand that's coming here, I think it's a great investment. Site is... as it's been said, it's a gateway site. I think it's the best site in Portland, and I think it. I just believe it's a very good investment for the city. I think also to provide certainty to what's going on, that certainty in real estate translates into higher pricing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm Tim Mitchell with Norris and Stevens. We're a locally owned commercial real estate firm Next year will be our 50th anniversary. We lease and sell all types of commercial properties and multifamily properties, both in the central city and all over the Portland metro area. I think that I'm also a member of the Central City Standing Committee for Portland Business Alliance, and we were given a presentation on this program. And I would like to say that we are fully behind it. I think that the scope of it is appropriate for the site. I think the mix of uses are also appropriate for the site, the density, and also the connectivity that it is going to provide in that part of town. You know, the Portland marketplace, we find ourselves as one of the tightest both office and multifamily markets in all of the country. And so this is something that is definitely needed going forward, and I think we would not have very much trouble leasing any of those opportunities up going forward.
You know, this may this is one of those anecdotal things I haven't absolutely confirmed, but I've heard it said a couple times about this site that this is the largest redevelopment site in a downtown in the United States, which is both wonderful and scary at the same time. Is that your sense too, from what you see around the country? This is a big one.
It's a pretty good-sized piece of land that you don't find very often in the Central Core. I think what Mark's company has done previously with the brewery blocks was fantastic. I think this is another opportunity to do something like that and make a big statement for Portland.
Questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. Appreciate your help with this. So those are our invited panels. We'll see if we have some other folks signed up to speak on this package of resolutions and ordinances.
Mayor, I had at the appropriate time, a couple amendments.
Oh, yeah. Okay, this would probably be a good time to put those on the table, please.
Okay. I think you might all have copies, but just in case you don't. So I'm offering two amendments. One is to the resolution, and one is to the IGA between PDC and the Housing Bureau. And they're nothing new. They simply reflect everything that's been said here today as the intent and everything that's been agreed to by PDC and the Housing Bureau. And I want to put them in one place just because I often find in our office when we're trying to do legislative history research, we're often looking for exhibits and we're looking for language and we can't seem to find it. And I think that's not a problem unique to my office. I think it's just some of the way we do business around here. So the First Amendment to the resolution simply reflects the Central City Concept Plan goal that we agreed on last week and has been said here is already, you know, part of the purpose there, and that is to have the housing, 30% of the housing be affordable to 0 to 80% median family income, and that's the amendment to the resolution. And then the amendment to ordinance or the IGA really just adds language that reflects the memo that was developed between the Housing Bureau and PDC, which I have here as well, and would include that memo as an attachment to make for a compact legislative history, and just simply says that PDC and the Housing Bureau will fulfill all their obligations with respect to affordable housing as agreed to by Council in the last couple weeks.
So Mayor, I'll second them for purpose of discussion.
Okay.
And then I have a question to the sponsor. So I support the amendment, but I want to ask a question about the first of the amendments. The language says that 30% of all new units targeting affordability at 0 to 80%. And so it raises an important question, which I think we have to grapple with. And that is the additional money that we added by bumping up to 45%, is it covered by our 30% set aside, or is it covered by a different standard? Because if it is covered by 30% set aside, then the focus would be on 0 to 60. And when I look at the outstanding report that the Housing Bureau brought to Council last month, that's exactly where we're not meeting our goals in the River District and in the Central City. It is also the policy goal of the 30% set aside, which we bumped to 45%, is 0 to 60. So the shortfall is in that area. The policy was intended. So to Dan, my question is, why have you proposed bumping it to 80%?
I haven't, and the intent remains that the money we adjusted last week is to still go for 0 to 60%. This is simply the language that the Planning and Sustainability Commission has included in the Central City Concept Plan, that there be a target throughout the city, Central City, of 30% of all new residential units being affordable to incomes between 0 and 80. But the money, the tax increment dollars, would be still confined to the 0 to 60%, as you observed.
So I guess...
I know it's a little confusing.
While I know what you're trying to do, and I support you, it just seems to me that it might be confusing, because on the one hand, the dollars that we're going to invest at the front end are for 0 to 60, but this says 30% of all units would be